You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband, let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray and you get a whole service just on
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. Since the dawn of time, marketers have been looking for a way to communicate with consumers. Now, more than ever, the tools in the arsenal of the marketing company have become quite refined and exceptionally sharp. Never before have we seen the ability to send targeted communications to clients, customers, or potential customers like we do right now. Everyone is online, everyone has an email account, and consumers are certainly more comfortable buying goods and paying for them online. If you're not convinced, free-to-air television in this country is losing market share at a rate of 7% a year. iTunes is now globally the largest distributor of music, mobile devices are now more prolific than ever before, and the youth of today now spend more time texting and instant messaging each other than at any other point in time. Add to this the rapid rollout and take-up of mobile broadband in this country, and you can now reach almost anyone, anywhere, in a matter of seconds, and cost-effectively. The sharpest tool in the marketing kit is email marketing, and I don't mean spam. The Australian government is serious about minimising spam, but email marketing, when done properly and legally, results in not only instant reactions, but instant polling of recipients, and in most cases, in real time. For example, every week, this show sends out an email informing our listeners what's on the show for this week. We have a category in our email called "The following links were of interest to us this week," primarily to inform listeners of newsworthy technological happenings, but also it's a straw poll, giving an insight into what our listeners are interested in so we can include the topic on the show by the number of clicks on any given topic. So now you've probably got a good idea about the power of email marketing. Melbourne radio personality, Mayor of Hootville and self-professed Luddite Brett De Hoot runs a leading PR company whose main role is to help Australian NGOs, that's non-government organisations, and NFPs, the not-for-profit sector, communicate. Brett will join us live in the studios in a few minutes' time to discuss the roles of email marketing, social networking and blogging in the modern-day world of internet and mobile communications.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam Turner talks about the 3G iPhone, or lack of it. Microsoft says it's made a fair offer to Yahoo. Symantec's latest security report, web attacks getting much worse. Telstra expects to win the broadband debate. And PayPal, mandatory, says eBay Australia. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron Smith.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Yahoo says no to Microsoft's $44 billion takeover bid. US investigators find stolen military hardware for sale on eBay. Photo sharing site Flickr now supports video. Symantec releases its latest internet security threat report, and an IBM memory breakthrough paves the way for 500,000 song music players. Welcome to Tech Talk News. While internet search giant and instant messaging company Yahoo is not opposed to some sort of deal with Microsoft, Chairman Roy Bostock and Chief Executive Jerry Yang said no to an offer of $44.6 billion last week. Microsoft gave Yahoo's board 3 weeks to enter into a definitive acquisition agreement before threatening to take the offer directly to shareholders. In a reply signed by Yang and Bostock, The board formally rejected Microsoft's proposal, saying it undervalues the company and is still not in the best interests of Yahoo or its shareholders. Yahoo said it was open to offers from any potential buyer, including Microsoft, but that it would reject anything below what it considers full value. The response is disappointing for Microsoft, which is reportedly in discussions with Rupert Murdoch's News Corp, with a view to joining its contested bid for Yahoo. Yahoo is also understood to be looking at an agreement with Time Warner's AOL, in which Yahoo would gain control of AOL, receive an investment from Time Warner, and give up a 20% stake in the combined entity. Such an investment would let Yahoo buy back billions of dollars of its own stock. Investigators from the United States Defense Department have uncovered a treasure trove of stolen military hardware for sale on the popular internet auction house eBay. The stolen military equipment includes parts for F-14 fighter jets, which investigators say could be purchased by international brokers and destined for Iran. Other items include nuclear biological protective suits, as well as unused chemical biological canisters used in mask filters. The Government Accountability Office said last week that the Defense Department regards much of the stolen equipment to be on the US munitions list, meaning there are restrictions on their overseas sales. Sarah Finicum, Director of Supply at the Office of Deputy Chief of Staff for the Army, said that the Army recognizes that the US military has had property accountability and visibility challenges, and that to correct the problem, the Army has started a program to account for all of its inventories. The popular online photo sharing site Flickr will begin allowing users to upload videos. Videos will show up anywhere that photos do in search results, photo streams, and RSS feeds. Any Flickr user will be able to view videos, but only pro members will be able to upload videos. A 90-second time limit has been imposed by Flickr while the new technology is assessed and fine-tuned, and individual video files must be smaller than 150 megabytes. Supported video formats currently include AVI, WMV, Apple's MOV format, MPEG 1, 2, and 4, and the popular 3GP format used by some mobile telephones. Analysts say that Flickr's foray into video hosting represents the latest example of Yahoo, which owns the photo sharing site, trying to keep pace with Google's YouTube in a crucial battleground. A report released by internet security firm Symantec says that social networking sites like Facebook, MySpace, and Bebo are fast becoming key targets for online fraud. Symantec's Internet Security Threat Report for the second half of 2007 shows there were nearly 88,000 phishing hosts for that period, an increase of 167% from the first half of 2007. Phishing hosts act as fake websites, collecting information including login and password details from unsuspecting users. The report says that attackers have adopted stealth tactics that prey on end users on individual computers via the World Wide Web, rather than attempting high-volume broadcast attacks to penetrate networks. Symantec suspects that this may be because enterprise network attacks are now more likely to be discovered and shut down, whereas specifically targeted malicious activity on end-user computers or websites is less likely to be detected. Symantec's 13th Internet Security Threat Report was based on data collected from more than 40,000 sensors deployed in more than 180 countries. And international computer giant IBM says it's invented a new type of computer memory which could boost storage capacity by 100 times. According to a study published in the 11th of April edition of Science magazine, the new storage medium could allow personal music players, like Apple's iPod, to store up to 500,000 songs. The so-called racetrack memory stores data in the boundaries, known as domain walls, between magnetic regions in nanowires. And unlike flash memory, it can be endlessly rewritten with no wear and tear. The technology could take up to 4 years to produce and a further 3 or 4 years to refine for commercial use. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Hutchison's three in the broadband war for mobiles have actually brought their prices down yet again.
It's very frustrating to me that this happens.
He chose to attack Apple's operating system for one simple reason.
It was the easiest one of the three.
But are people going to nick things with high voltages through it?
Yes.
But yes, because people are stupid.
What's my website going to look like now? There's got to be some form of backward compatibility, I would hope.
You can't say the word statistics when you need to, but you can prove a lot with them.
Since then, the phone has been washed.
And you'll also be listening to the unedited version on the stream.
which could contain anything.
What about a mobile phone under your skin? And would you think that'd be good? It's a bit like, you know, the
Where does a SIM card go?
That should be allegedly.
Allegedly.
Can't wait to see it. It's supposed to be a completely different direction altogether.
But anyway,
it's like the three mobile plans. It's a delicate balance, isn't it?
It is.
Find a happy medium for everybody.
Can you say that any faster?
No.
Andrew, is that you?
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello again. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting in front of me this evening, two very willing and able gentlemen, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan. Good evening to you both.
I'm willing, he's able.
Yes, indeed. I've heard that. Yeah, well, what a week it's been. Anyway, who wants to go first tonight?
What a big week in technology.
Yes. What a big week.
Hasn't stopped today, has it?
What a big week in the Tech Talk Radio universe with catastrophe after catastrophe.
Let's start off
with a negative note and we'll build up from there.
Yeah, we've still got a head above water. Thank you very much, Dr. Ron. No thanks to PowerWeb.
No. What happened there? That was a disaster.
Well, you can read all about it on the Tech Talk Radio website. If you're interested, just follow the links through to off the front page saying we've had some download issues.
And to all those who've been trying to download past episodes or anything like along those lines, please check again. It's all on its way back.
It's all heading back into the land of cyberspace. No, the provider who we've been quite happy with and been very successfully serving our MP3 needs to every man, woman and person out there in the world who likes listening to us, including a few radio stations, they decided that they were going to remove our files because, quote unquote, we're putting a bit of an extra load on their servers. Now,
apparently people actually want to listen to the show and that's a bit much for them to be able to cope with.
Absolutely. Now, I thought, well, that's quite flattering on one hand, but then quite annoying on the other hand because there are people out there trying to download shows. So anyway, we have since come up with an alternative arrangement at the moment and things are actually, as Graham alluded to, back on track. And if you're looking for some of the older shows, they're not quite good. So
If you click on something and you don't find it there, click back in a couple of days. It'll make its way back.
Anyway, one thing that gets under my skin. What's the word for getting under your skin?
One thing which you find subcutaneous.
That's it. One thing I find subcutaneous is hosting providers that say they will deliver one thing and then turn around. Yeah. And then say, no, we won't do that because, anyway, I find that...
It's a failing of oversubscription models in general.
Well, I think the competition in that, spectrum of web hosting is everyone has to up everyone else. And when push comes to shove, they really can't do it.
We've seen this for years. We've had large ISPs here who used to say unlimited plans, unlimited downloads, and then in the fine print, fair use policy applies, which is a completely arbitrary way of them saying, well, if we think that you're overloading our systems or... enough's enough, then we're just going to implement some arbitrary line in the sand.
And also internet providers where they have an insufficient amount of incoming bandwidth to supply all their customers based on the assumption that their customers aren't going to use the maximum bandwidth all the time.
Indeed.
Bosses could read your email, according to Julia Gillard, in the news that's just come out.
Yeah.
The federal government is basically saying to people that they can look at your email without...
We've known this for years.
Isn't that already provided for?
Now, I went to a legal thing because I'm an employer. I went to an illegal...
You went to an illegal what?
I went to a legal meeting about how to treat employees technically.
Yeah.
What you can and can't do. At that meeting, which was about 2 or 3 years ago, if you as an employer who own a domain name and are running a business from a domain name have every right to intercept and look at emails that go to your domain name.
Yeah, that's what I understood the case to
providing
be. If the company provided the email service, then it was then all the data that was involved in it belonged to the company.
Absolutely. So I don't know what all the brouhaha's about. This is not new.
Well, maybe they're looking at, trying to work out what people are accessing on their own personal email accounts from their work computers. If they're looking up their Hotmail or their Gmail from their work computers, whether they're trying to get access to that sort of data.
Who knows?
I'm not sure.
Does it say why she
mystified me?
Why she thought it pertinent to alert everybody to this? Because it's something that's been in place in Australia for years.
The new laws would give companies extra power to monitor their computer networks to prevent cyber attacks.
New laws?
Apparently.
What?
They would be allowed to check their staff's emails and internet communications without their consent. Deputy Prime Minister Julia Gillard told Channel 9 the proposed changes would step up national security of Australia's computer network. So it's all...
Yeah.
She
was all over the radio today spruiking it.
I just think they've lost the plot a little bit. I really do. Your thoughts, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Victoria Police hits Facebook wall.
Oh,
rather unfortunate, really. Yeah. The Victoria Police has been refused access to a self-proclaimed terrorist's Facebook details after the social networking website demanded more information about an international counter-terrorism investigation into its member. Counter-terrorism agents were asked to supply more details about the death threat made by Facebook against a Melbourne Jewish woman and her family by an alleged member of the Iran-backed terror group Hezbollah.
This is the interesting difficulty that you're faced with sometimes when you have investigations, the police investigations or law enforcement investigations that span one or more or two or more jurisdictions. And
yeah,
there may the police in this instance may have an expectation that an ISP or an organisation like Facebook is going to just release information, or they might even apply for a warrant to obtain information. But that's all completely meaningless.
But the information's not held in the same jurisdiction as the threat's been made.
That's right.
The offender might be in a different jurisdiction again.
Correct.
It's all very complicated.
So what's the world coming to? And I mean that seriously. Well, is this going to be a major problem?
This is what the world's coming to.
This is what the world is now. And it's the issue that we were talking about some months ago with Lid. We were talking about, and also you're talking to Eugene Kaspersky about having some sort of internet police.
Internet Interpol.
Yeah. Personally, I don't think it's going to happen because we can't. Well, in a small country like ours, we've got, you know, what, 5, 6, 7, 8 different police forces, and you're wanting the whole world to get together and cooperate, and we can't just do it locally. It'll never happen.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Send us an email. Tell us your thoughts. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have a listen to Adam Turner. He's viewing from the couch the iPhone. There's a lot of rumours going around this week about a new iPhone hitting Australian shores. We're going to tell you about that. And joining us after the break, too, is the Mayor of Hootville, Mr. Brett De Hoot.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service. Just on.
How does it go?
It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
That you are. Welcome back, Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron Graham Callaghan, and our guest this evening has joined us from Hootville Communications. Brett De Hoot is no stranger to Melbourne radio, by the way, too. He's quite at home here. He just sort of sat in front of the microphone as if he'd been there all of his life. So he is here live in the studio with us. And we're going to be talking about non-for-profits and NGOs, non-government organisations, and email marketing, and just how they're not using it right and how they are using it right and how you can use it right, too, if you're that way inclined. But in the meanwhile, we're just going to have a quick little sojourn into iPhone territory. Apple's iPhone, boys. Have you had any thoughts about getting one yet? Because there's lots of rumours out there at the moment.
There are. There's rumours about an Australian version that might have 3G.
And there's all,
and
yes,
that might not be locked to one carrier.
Yes.
And rumours that if it is introduced in Australia and a large carrier like the Big T takes it up, they're not going to accept anything less than an HSDPA version. It will not be worth their while. Is it turning off GSM?
Yeah, that's right, because that's not the network that they're trying to promote. So, interesting times. There's also been denials of all these rumours as well. But, yeah, presumably.
And they're even talking about the synced opening of a Sydney Apple store, because there's rumoured to be some down here in Melbourne.
Well, Apple like to do this, don't they? They like to have something to announce at their events.
Mm.
So, yeah, it'll certainly be one to watch.
Anyway, according to, it came out, the rumour started on the Macintosh community forum, Mac Talk. And everyone's gone a bit, you know, over the top with these rumours. But according to a long-time MacTalk user, Apple has been informing resellers of their iPhone strategy for Australia. Resellers have been informed of the following things. Last week of June release, that's, about 3 months away, more than one carrier, no contract to lock in, which means you can't buy it on a plan, you must buy it outright. And current resellers will be able to sell phones.
Now, I'd be willing to bet that our very own Adam has got a view about this.
Oh, he certainly does, and here it is.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Are you sick of hearing about the iPhone yet? The rumour mill went into overdrive last week with the talk of a 3G iPhone and its imminent release in Australia. If you write a blog, there's no easier way to bring in traffic these days than to speculate on the future of the iPhone. The version of the iPhone currently available in the US is only 2G, so it can't take advantage of the faster 3G mobile data networks in Australia, such as Telstra's NextG network. Everyone is waiting to see when Apple will release a 3G iPhone. Apple guru Walt Mossberg recently made a throwaway remark that the iPhone will be 3G in 60 days, but this is unlikely. Paperwork needs to be lodged with the FCC in the United States 60 days before a wireless device is released, and iPhone watchers have been staking out the FCC without any joy. Depending on who you believe, the 3G iPhone is coming to Australia in June, or July, or not until next year. Of course, Apple might consider dumping the 2G iPhone on Australia, rather than waiting for the 3G version, but I think it would have a riot on its hands if it did so. The desire for a 3G phone is one of the few things stopping more Australians importing iPhones and hacking them to work locally. Other reports from the website MacTalk claim Australian retailers have already been briefed regarding an iPhone launch in the last week of June. This would seem to tie in with the Sydney Apple Store opening, any Worldwide Developer Conference announcements, the upcoming iPhone 2.0 software update, and allow time for stock to filter into the country. Of course, it would clash with Apple's typical policy of not telling anyone anything. Now, Apple went as far as denying it had spoken to retailers, which is more than Apple's standard no comment. Whether this means they're telling the truth or lying is another story. Now, the latest rumours claim that the Australian iPhone won't be locked into one carrier as it is in the US, and buyers won't be locked into contracts. Earlier this year, legal experts said restricting the iPhone to a single carrier in Australia could be considered anti-competitive. It seems at least once a week someone finds a new angle on the iPhone story and the hype continues. A few weeks ago, analyst group Gartner changed its opinion of the iPhone. Gartner originally deemed Apple's groovy phone unfit for business, but the upcoming firmware 2.0 release means that the iPhone will be on par with the BlackBerry, Windows Mobile, and Symbian Series 60 devices for basic corporate use. Interestingly, Gartner thinks the iPhone might now be able to replicate the iPod's halo effect, which in consumer land has seen people buying Macs after using an iPod. It will be interesting to see if once big business gets a taste of the iPhone, if it opens the floodgates for Apple products into corporate land. Meanwhile, nobody knows exactly what's going on with the Australian iPhone. I reckon it's a fair bet a 3G iPhone will be in Australian stores by Christmas, but your guess is as good as mine.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, thank you very much to Adam for that insight into the Apple iPhone. Adam is the journalist who writes for The Age here in Melbourne, The Green Guide, and the Sydney Morning Herald. So he's the IT columnist for those specific magazines and a lot of other things.
He's columns
got an IT Wire and
blog.
Things like that. Yeah, he's got a blog.
Seeking Nerdvana.
He has. And that chuckle that you hear that belongs to
what better way to introduce our guest?
Self-professed Luddite and PR guru, Mr. Brett De Hoot, who actually is probably half the reason why we're all sitting here in the studio tonight. He used to have a program on Melbourne Radio,
And he used to ask me questions, and now we can ask him questions. So this is a bit of what comes around goes around, really, isn't it? Hello, Mr. De Hoot, how are you?
How soon the student become the master.
Oh, yes, you're done.
Greetings all. Good to be here.
Lovely to have you back on the radio. No,
it's an absolute joy to be here.
Now, tell us a little bit about Hootville, PR extraordinaire, featuring all those.
Not extraordinaire, but... I run. It's a PR company, like many PR companies. We get people on the television and in the newspaper, on the radio. We might help people build their websites or their publish their magazines or do some media training with them, so on and so forth. That sort of suite of stuff. What is different about us is we do it for non-profit organisations.
That's your point of difference.
That is.
Yeah.
We try and be communications and media for good, not evil. You know. So we have clients like Urala, Mental Illness Fellowship, Victoria in Australia. Hepatitis C Victoria, we work with Oxfam, we work with the Australian Conservation Foundation, folks like that who, just like every other organisation, need to get their piece of the media limelight and their piece of the media pie, need to communicate to their members, raise money, you know, plug events, all that sort of stuff, and that's who we work for.
Mm-hmm. And Melbourne and Sydney based?
Yep, we have clients around the country and from... You know, a lot of disability organisations and mental health organisations and Combined Pensioners Superannuants Association.
Oh, goodness me.
Yes, we even represent old people.
So how are they communicating these days? Are they doing it right? Largely, are they doing it wrong?
They're largely communicating in the same ways as they used to communicate.
Oh, the postage stamp thing.
Oh, goodness me.
Australia Facsimiles, Post must love
the old-fashioned machines.
Have you heard of the telex, Dr.
Ray? I have. I have heard of the telex. I studied it at school,
there
I think.
There you go. Yes. There you go. Yes, they're telex-based communication systems. Oh, dear. No, not quite, but not far from it. You know, I suppose it's like the rest of the world. The printing press has been around since Weber, you know, centuries ago, and this online stuff is relatively new. And it takes a long time for people to turn around their expectations. You know, I was talking to a group of fundraisers, the Fundraising Institute of Australia, and there was, I don't know, 60 or 70 fundraisers. The people who send you those letters in your mailbox asking you for a donation at tax time, there'll be some in just about every mailbox for every listener out there, and just before Christmas time. And those people between them send literally millions of letters and communications.
That must cost a fortune comparatively.
An absolute sinful, evil, wanton, wasteful fortune. And I did ask everyone in the room, 60, 70 people, who here has an email list to which they might send, you know, instead of a letter, an email? One hand meekly went up and said, yes, I've got a list of a few hundred and I experimented recently, but it didn't have a great result, so we won't do it again.
I dabbled.
And of course, the sponsors of those events are all Australia Post, printers, designers, people whose vested interest
they know
is
where their butters,
absolutely. And it's historical. You know, those charities, some of them have been around 90 years or 50 years, but they weren't collecting a lot of email addresses, you know, all the way through. So they've got a certain way of doing things. You know, there must be a magazine. Every member must have a magazine, and it must be printed on paper and sent in the mail. Mm. You know, we must communicate to members, so we will write them a letter. And all of those sort of older fashioned ideas. I mean, they have a bit of modernity. They all have websites, but they're fairly basic, I'd say.
So is the reason for their sticking with the ways they know just because of that? They don't know any other way? They're not savvy to the online way of marketing these days?
It's probably dangerous to be quoting Donald Rumsfeld, but he was pilloried, right, when he talked about the things we know we know.
The things we know we don't know. I love this.
And the things that we don't know we don't know. And unfortunately, the communications game and the modern stuff that you guys are very familiar with falls into that category of people don't even know that they don't know it. You know? So they happily, regretfully and resentfully and curmudgeonly spend $15,000 maybe to send out 1,500 people an 8-page magazine when they could do it for, I don't know, a fifth.
But they don't even know there's another way. They're not even aware that they could be doing it more efficiently.
And the expertise is not there. You know, quite frankly, and I've said this to them, to their faces, you know, en masse, the skills in the corporate sector aren't there in terms of website development and communications and marketing in general, but it's exacerbated further in the non-profit sector where the money isn't there for salaries. And the sort of people, generally speaking, who are into PR, marketing, communications, websites, they're not growing up fantasizing about working for Urala. They're growing up fantasizing about working for Apple. You know, so the best of the talent generally gravitates towards the corporate sector, generally speaking. And generally speaking, the expertise does not fall into the communications departments.
So what are they doing about it? Are they're getting in touch with organisations such as yours, obviously.
What are you doing about them doing something about it?
That's a good question, yes.
Well, I'm insulting their lack of knowledge and comparing them to Donald Rumsfeld. Look, we're trying to get them for a start. You know, just websites that aren't just brochures on the web. you know, that actually do something, which might use a bit of video, that might have, heaven forbid, an electronic newsletter.
Oh, goodness, you know, me.
That is a real step ahead for a lot of people who at the moment don't even have that. So they're sending people who they don't know, who gave an address years ago, a magazine that they slave over and angst over for months, spend a fortune to print and post, that they use volunteer time to stuff into envelopes, and they don't even know if it's been opened, if it's landed, which pages were read. You know, it doesn't give people
who's
an automatic...
reading it, so yeah, when they're reading it, what they're doing with the information inside.
A magazine's something you don't put return to sender on, is it? You just go, oh, they're not here, just chuck it in the bin.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So people are satisfied with that because I don't think they know that there is a better way.
Yeah.
And if they do know there's a better way, it means, oh, gosh, doing things differently. And they're that sector is no different to most other sectors. Change is not exactly welcomed with open arms.
These guys, too, are probably soliciting for funds so that they can do, you know, a better job in the world out there as well. A lot of people are now judging the credibility and the, you know, just how well the organisation stands in the real world by the quality of their website. Absolutely. A good website means a reputable company, a company which can be trusted. How are you seeing this in this sector? Is this very much...
If you're trying to recruit money from people, or so to speak, or solicit money from people, that website and that look is very important. But staff is another thing. Just like every other sector, there is an absolute desperate fight to grab people to work for you these days. And what is the first thing a prospective employee will do, particularly in a market where there are jobs around? Go look at the website to get a feel for the organisation. And if that website looks slow and dated and old and dusty, they're less likely to apply, especially if they're go-getters themselves.
Mm.
So where are we going to go? What should an organisation do?
Some organisations have got it right. You know, one organisation I can mention that's not a client of mine, of whom I'm very jealous, is Beyond Blue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm jealous
Mr.
of
Jeff
them
Kennett,
for many reasons.
Ex-Victorian Premier.
Well-funded, well-regarded, prominent. You know.
But he has a reputation.
He does. But they also have the advantage that they've only existed in this era. You know, they don't have any history. They don't have any baggage. They didn't start a magazine because guess what? They were around when they were invented, created... The internet's been around
so
and a factor.
Beyond Blue is a referral service to
Beyond
an
Blue
existing...
is a referral service. They only exist on
because
the
others
web
do.
In reality.
Yeah.
Other people deliver the services. They have the advantage of being new and modern, so all of their resources are online, and no one expects necessarily to be able to call them. No one expects to be visiting a local branch. You know, that's a huge advantage. People like GetUp, which is a campaigning advocacy website-based organisation. Fantastic operation. They have a massive email list. And they contact that email list and ask them to take direct action online that minute, whether it be signing a petition, sending a letter to stop Japanese whaling, or to tell the Liberal Party to say sorry to Indigenous people, whatever it is. It's instantly activated. You're instantly measured. 12,000 people have now signed this signature. 12,001 people have now signed this signature. We want to get to 15,000 by midnight tonight. And there's a clock ticking down. These are people who get the web. And then when you sign that petition, you give your postcode and you're joined to a map of Australia. And there's little dots in every postcode. And you can go and see how many people in Box Hill have signed that petition. And then say, this is hopeless. We need more people in Box Hill, and theoretically send the email forward and try and generate it. These are people who started off in this era with a very much a web-savvy perspective, and that's reflected in the work they do.
That's exciting because it's all happening in real time, and it's steering your business, isn't it? It's giving you a minute-by-minute...
It's something business has never had.
Direction,
real-time
yeah.
interaction with its customers or its contributors.
Compare that to another organisation which sends a letter with a little tear-off slip down the bottom with the scissor icon. And you're expected to open the envelope, read it, be moved by the story, cut off the bottom
of it. Find a pair of scissors.
Find a pair of scissors, fill in the form, and send it in an envelope via Australia Post with a $10 check.
Yeah,
and
they're doing their bit. They're putting the postage prices up shortly too, so that'll encourage people to get online and do an email, won't it, surely?
No instant response, no video. You know, one of my organisations, Seeing Eye Dogs Australia, they train and breed dogs for blind people. We ask people to sponsor those pups. One thing I would like to see on our website, you know, just the way you sponsor children in poor countries, you can sponsor a Labrador and Kensington.
A guide dog.
Absolutely, $30 a month. And I want to see video of individual puppies doing cute puppy stuff.
You need dog cam.
And saying, absolutely, sponsor this dog right now. Mm-hmm. Or sponsor this one. What do you want? The brown one, the blonde one, or the black one? They're all very cute. They're all doing different things. They've all got cute names. One, for whatever reason, might appeal to you. You've got 60 seconds of video. Click and sponsor. I imagine that will have a more, that's the emotions that we can draw upon using the web and 2.0 and so on and so forth, which you can't do in black and white or in colour, in two-dimensional format on the piece of paper.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? We'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, thank you to our guest, Brester Hoot, who is, yes, all about those sort of things. Email was very interesting, wasn't it, Dr. Ron?
It was extremely interesting.
Have you learned something?
It's somebody I have. It's somebody who uses that technology at the coalface every day, which I don't do. Email marketing.
It certainly is a medium which I think will be well and truly explored over the next few years.
I think so. No, I think so. It's got heaps of potential, and certainly with the technology that's behind it now, it's come so far from just having contacts in categories inside Outlook and highlighting 100 contact cards and clicking send to contact. It's so much more than that now, isn't it?
Absolutely. And even to the point now where you can use PayPal and those sort of organisations to secure a little, you know, donation. You can grab a button off the PayPal site if you've got a PayPal account and stick this little button on your email newsletter when you send it out and say, please give us $10 or $20. Click the button of your choice type sort of thing as you go down the list. So I think, you know, things like that would be really good.
Well, you can link to external resources like that, like PayPal.
Yeah.
And you can link it into your shopping cart applications.
Now, in the true sense of Anna Corrin, we're going to talk about PayPal now. How about that?
Oh, are we? Oh, good. That was fortuitous.
It was. PayPal are going to be using Australians as guinea pigs.
Oh, good.
In the new form of PayPal shopping and eBay shopping online. In news that's sort of come out, which has got a few people's noses out of joint, but I actually think this is going to be quite good. Online auction website eBay is using Australia to do this new trial, and the new policy, which prohibits all other methods of payment except the transaction gateway in PayPal. So what you can do on PayPal is use your credit card and use the PayPal account itself, which is your email address to pay your bills and stuff like that. But it means that you can't do bank transfers or anything like that anymore.
So
they're going to remove that.
This means that if you're, I'm just trying to get this clear in my head, if you're a PayPal partner, is it what they're saying? You can only use PayPal as a method of transactions.
If you're a merchant here in Australia, you can, on eBay, which is the world's largest online shopping center, you can now only use PayPal to pay for your goods that you purchase.
Right, so you can't solicit for Western Union wire transfers.
And don't mention that word.
You can't ask for direct credits into bank accounts.
No, you can't.
Which is something that's,
I think it's a terrific idea, actually, because I think I was reading further down that the PayPal guys were saying that most of the fraudulent activity occurs outside of the eBay system and the PayPal system. Because don't forget, PayPal does own eBay. So, you know, they've got a vested interest there. In fact, it's almost a bit nepotistic in a lot of respects. But
it means that they're tightly integrated systems, though. So where you have the auction and the transaction taking place on one side, you've got the financial exchange happening as well. And the two things aren't completely separate entities. They're linked tightly together and they can be tracked.
And I think that's got to be good because if one other thing that PayPal's going to do, they've got a protection program, which you may or may not be familiar with. It protects people if you buy goods and, well, not so much services, but goods on PayPal, and they don't arrive or for whatever reason, it's not what you expected. There is a protection program where you can get your money back. Now, this has been a contentious issue in the course of time as well. There have been a lot of people unhappy with this process. But nonetheless, they do offer it. And the level of protection they offer is $3,000. But under this new system here in Australia, that's going to move from $3,000 of protection up to $20,000 worth of protection.
Wow.
Which means that if you're buying things online, which are fairly, you know, high in price, piece of electronic equipment or something like that.
People spending that much, those sorts of amounts of money on eBay transactions.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Wow.
Absolutely. You got to, don't forget that eBay is replacing a lot of those Trading Post magazines that used to be fairly predominant in the early 80s. Yeah. And on those things, there are things like computers, and cars and boats, fairly large consumable items. And these are actually exempt from... There are a few items that are exempt from this new system.
Well, they have special policies for those items anyway, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what PayPal are up to. They're actually going to say, righto, close everything else down apart from paying through us and we'll give you a bit more protection. But for the large organisations, the large consumers, you can still do it through the direct deposit, which I think is fantastic because I use PayPal all the time. I prefer to use PayPal because instead of giving my credit card details, my 5353 blah, blah, blah over the internet for people to collect and do what they do with, in this case, I'm just giving my email address, which I've actually given.
And you only give your credit card number to PayPal themselves.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's so safe. Even if you don't, as a merchant, even if you don't have credit card facilities and you're soliciting for donations or you want to sell something online, become a merchant. You have to prove your identity to PayPal, which is relatively easy and straightforward. And then once you've done that, then all you need to do is say, please pay Ron. Oh, Ron's email address is ron@... And how much do you want to give Ron? Oh, I'll give him, $25 or whatever it is like that.
$35.
Done easily. You're worth that much.
Mm.
And I think that is just, in the whole scheme of things, a very secure way of doing things. Now, from a merchant's point of view, it's only, the commission basis is only a 1.1 to near enough 3%, which is less than credit cards. So if you're a large bank and, like I take credit card facilities at the office, but I'm going to scrap them and delete them and say, Commonwealth Bank, thank you very much.
It's been fun. It's been swell.
Yeah, you've got to compete with eBay now, who aren't charging annual fees, who aren't doing this, and it's been great. See you later. And you can accept credit cards. So I just think that the PayPal way to go is really good. And you don't need to be a PayPal account holder. I can't get that emphasized enough. Mm, you don't need to be a PayPal account holder to actually get all this
stuff done.
To actually use it. To send money using PayPal. You can send to an account holder without having to sign up.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I've been talking too long. We're going to go over tonight. I can feel it in my bones.
Can you?
Telstra expects to win the broadband plan because of this thing. I don't know whether you mentioned this in the news tonight, Dr. Ron, but Telstra has moved to preempt the Rudd government's tender for a $9 million broadband network, saying it expects to get the nod from the project and we'll get an unprecedented $4.7 billion worth of taxpayer subsidies. And they ask for a bounty. Not a bounty. What do you call it? A deposit. A bond, I think is the word.
Bond, okay.
Yeah, if you're half interested, you've got to put this money up before you can bid for it and all that sort of stuff. But I think this is, once again, can I put my suggestion here? What we should have done is that the Australian government, instead of selling off all of our assets, put an organisation together to roll out the cable, the satellite, the technology for fibre to the node, for everything else like that, sell the bandwidth back to Telstra through the government body and do it that way. So it's government-owned. There's no competitiveness behind it. It's an infrastructure.
But we've already sold all the copper cables.
Absolutely. And I think, well, we're not going to use them. We're going to use fibre, aren't we? We're going to use bits of blue cable.
Well, we've already sold all the trenches that they're in and all the
dig more.
All the infrastructure, all that, all the exchanges that they're going to link back to.
Mm.
All of that's all been sold off. And the copper's still going to be the last mile, as they say, from the pillar to your home.
Absolutely.
And that's been sold too.
It's no longer owned by the Australian public, is it?
No, it's owned by a private company. Mm, very sad.
F-Secure. They're a security people, not unlike Kaspersky's and all that sort of stuff. Have you dealt with F-Secure before? Graham, you might have seen some on some of your clients' machines.
Yeah, I've seen it around from time to time. Yeah, I haven't had huge amounts of dealings with it.
Yeah, I can't speak from experience here, but Lyd caught up with one of the guys from F-Secure in the United States, and she'll introduce him in just a sec, all about what's going on in the online world and antiviruses and Trojans and things like that. It's a bit scary. It also sort of tells us what we sort of already know at the moment, but what we're to expect. Now, the RSA conference, which is was in San Francisco, has all the major organisations.
What's the RSA conference?
Responsible serving of alcohol.
No.
No?
No, but she did send a photo over with had the bomb squad out the front. The San Francisco bomb squad out the front. It's a security organisation sort of thing.
Really? Okay.
But no, it's all about security.
It's security,
and being,
isn't it?
Being safe online and anti-hacking and all that sort of stuff. And it's the large players are there, the big boys, talking all about, that's where Eugene won last year when, his antivirus product was, stood up to basically everything they could throw at it. But,
which I'm using now on my Windows machines.
Are you? Very good. Anyway, here's Lyd to talk a little bit about F-Secure and what it opens up at the RSA conference.
Hello, Patrick. Thank you for joining us on Tech Talk.
My pleasure.
Tell me a little bit about F-Secure.
We're a European IT security company. Mm-hmm. We've been doing security for 20 years now, primarily antivirus, but obviously we're doing anti-spam, firewalls, anti-phishing, basically the whole thing.
So what does your product offer?
It's like a sort of peace of mind against all of these types of threats. It's a one-stop solution, especially for home users. You install it onto your PC, that's it. You don't have to worry about it. It protects you against all of these types of threats. Mm-hmm. And it's been designed to be easy to use, automatically updated, not just for the signatures themselves, but also sort of technology comes rolling down to your PC without you ever noticing it. The way we try to deliver security is security as a service. I mean, that's sort of a hype word in the whole industry, but we've been doing it now for, I think, 7-8 years. We know that people don't necessarily want to buy the 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008 version mm-hmm. just to get, you know, the latest and greatest.
What about mobile technology?
I think there we're in a much better situation than we are on the internet. The good thing about that is everyone's on board, everyone's aware that we have to deal with security concerns. Yes, we do have 401 mobile viruses as of now. Yes, there have
401.
Been 401. Compared to 680,000 for PCs.
Oh, wow.
So the numbers are obviously very different. The mobile operators are concerned. I mean, they are aware that these threats exist. Mm-hmm. The operating system manufacturers, Symbian, Microsoft, BlackBerry, Apple, all of these are aware that these threats exist. Mm-hmm. And we've started dealing with them now, before they're really out of hand. So we're trying not to repeat the problem we have on PCs, basically. We are having an open dialogue between us, the security industry, the operating system manufacturers, the operators. And I think we're in a much better place to secure the mobile space than we are with the PCs.
Apple security, is that changing now?
It is definitely changing. I mean, yes, we have seen Trojans for Macs. We haven't seen real viruses for Macs OS X. The Trojans we've seen have been fairly simple, but yes, they exist. So you can't say that your Mac is entirely secure, but the likelihood of you getting hit or getting infected on a Mac versus getting infected on a PC is obviously totally different. However, I don't really approve of Apple's advertising saying that, you know, buy a Mac and you'll never get a virus again.
Yeah.
We've actually even talked to users who've had their Macs infected. They called up Apple support and the support people said, you know, no, you're running a Mac, you can't get a virus. But, you know, I have a virus on my Mac right now, how do I get rid of it? No, it's impossible. And that's sort of taking it too far.
Yeah.
Yes, from a virus point of view, absolutely, you'd be more secure on a Mac than on a PC. But Apple really have to take these things seriously. We have definitely seen an increase in the number of vulnerabilities on the Apple operating systems, including the iPhone. Safari browser, for sure. I mean, they just fixed, 86 vulnerabilities a few weeks back. They fixed another 11 now in QuickTime. And actually, QuickTime, which is cross-platform, it's not just on Mac, it's also on Windows.
Yeah.
We've seen a huge use or increase of using that as the vector of getting into your PC. There's been lots of vulnerabilities found in QuickTime that enables Windows malware to get onto your PC. Why that is because of the huge sales of the iPods. They've sold 100 million iPods or something like that.
Yeah.
Every single iPod user is installing iTunes. With iTunes comes QuickTime. QuickTime integrates into your web browser without you really knowing it. Any website could actually load QuickTime from a web page. And yep. If there's a vulnerability in QuickTime, the same web page could use that vulnerability to get into your PC and install malware. And this is what we've seen. So we've seen sort of a change from, you know, a few years back it was email attachments. And we started fixing that problem by filtering out malicious email attachments. So the bad guys moved from email attachments to what we call drive-by downloads. And that is you getting infected by just visiting a site. Presto, bam, you get infected. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to click on a link. You don't have to download a file. You just visit a website. And this is what we call a drive-by download. Now, the first drive-by download sites we saw were using Microsoft vulnerabilities. Vulnerabilities in Windows, vulnerabilities in Internet Explorer. Now, Microsoft has gotten really good at fixing these vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. So we started seeing the bad guys moving away from Microsoft applications to other browsers, Firefox, Opera, Safari. And nowadays, these browsers are updating automatically too. So what we're seeing right now is that the bad guys are using QuickTime plugins, RealPlayer plugins, WinZip plugins, Winamp plugins. Plugins that are, or applications that are hooking into your browser without you knowing it to show more dynamic content on the web. Whether that is movie files or audio or flash movies or whatever. The bottom line is that they're integrating into your browser, which means that potentially they can be exploited over the web. And that's what we're seeing. And the application to exploit right now seems to be QuickTime because it's installed on so many PCs. But I do think that we will see malware on iPhone because it's such a popular device. We have found a number of vulnerabilities that could get malware onto your device. And now that the software development kit is available in June this year, people are going to upgrade to version 2.0, which is going to support third-party applications. And these third-party applications have access to, you know, the network, your address book, your mail, pretty much everything on the phone. So that could potentially be a big problem.
Thank you so much for joining us on Tech Talk.
My pleasure.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget is the Fraunhofer non-exploding lithium-ion battery. How exciting is this, especially to all those Dell laptop owners?
A non-exploding battery you think is more exciting than an exploding battery?
I think it would. Again, glass half full, glass half empty. An exploding battery would be quite exciting, but also quite terrifying.
Yes.
Lithium-ion batteries have kept gadget lovers on their toes for some years with their occasionally combustive ways. Now, researchers at the Fraunhofer Institute for Scientific Research in Germany think they've solved this problem by successfully swapping the liquid electrolyte, that is the flammable stuff, used in conventional lithium-ion batteries with a non-combustible alternative.
What a good idea.
ISC team leader Dr. Kai Christian Namola, in a statement earlier this week, said, "We have succeeded in replacing the inflammable organic electrolytes with a non-flammable polymer that retains its shape."
So this means no more Sony batteries going to go kapoof in your computer?
Allegedly.
Well, that's good.
But don't get too excited. We have at least another 3 to 5 years before these non-explosive batteries make their way into laptops and cell phones.
Mm.
Thought it was good, though.
Oh, very good.
Good gadget. The Fraunhofer non-exploding lithium-ion battery.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
The website is flightaware.com. Have you ever been to this site?
No. What's FlightAware?
I had it pointed out to me during the week. It's a great interactive website which tracks not only commercial but private aircraft in and out of the US.
Handy if you're in the US.
It is, or if you're flying to the US, or you're coming from the US, a great mapping interface.
Or if
you're
meeting somebody who's coming from the US.
Exactly,
the airport, yeah.
Exactly. A great mapping interface shows real-time location and progress and arrival times of aircraft. You can search by flight number or airport code. Now, I put in the airport code for Melbourne here.
ML.
It recognized that was Melbourne, and it drew a map, but it just said that didn't have a lot of real-time data. But if you go to an airport in the US, for example.
LAX.
Yes, you've got all the real-time information, the flight time and the locations of the planes. It's amazing.
What you need to see is when people are walking from Terminal 4 down to Terminal 1 for their domestic flight. Oh, that's a walk.
Exactly. So if you're listening in the US or you're a frequent flyer there to there or from there, flightaware.com is the Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Paul Rothmund is a computer scientist and an artist, although not necessarily in that order. Using a few DNA molecules, an atomic force microscope, and a computer, he can fit the likenesses of 50 billion smiley faces into a space no bigger than a drop of water.
Great.
Rothmund refers to his brew of art, biology, and technology as DNA origami because it is created by using hundreds of short DNA strands to fold much longer genetic ribbons into nanoscale shapes and patterns.
What's the practical application of this, Dr. Ron?
I don't know that there is one.
Just to be clear.
I'm speechless.
The resulting microscopic creations are currently on display through May 12 at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art in New York City, as part of the Design and the Elastic Mind exhibit. Yeah,
that's the one that's on the backs onto Central Park, not the Guggenheim across the road from it, off 6th Avenue.
You've been over there.
I have.
The show includes images of snowflakes and maps, not to mention 1970s inspired smiley faces in DNA strands. There you go. That's our odd spot.
Fantastic. Yes, because someone can, really. It's the only reason,
correct,
isn't it?
Because they can. Because they can.
Okay, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. That was Dr. Ron with all the good gossip and odd things that are happening in the tech world this week. Until next week on the radio station you're currently listening to, we'll return with more of the same. So until then, stay safe, everybody, and thanks for listening to us and your ear pods and stuff like that on the train, because that's where we get a lot of our listeners. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panelists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.